This week on the show, we discuss the Patriots at the halfway point of their season with 98.5 Sports Hub's Big Jim Murray. The Celtics are starting to turn it around after the Gordon Hayward injury, and what a World Series it's been. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Ah, yes. Another Victory Monday here on the Callin' It podcast. Alex Barth, Alex Lovitz with you. That's, what, four in a row now, right?
Yeah. Or, yeah, I think
four
so.
Four in a row,
yeah,
I believe, for the Patriots. It's been good since a shaky start to the season. Mm-hmm. Not everything where they want it to be, but getting close. Joining us to break down both yesterday's win over the Chargers and the Patriots first half as a whole from 98.5 The Sports Hub, Big Jim Murray. Jim, thanks for calling in.
My pleasure. Well, breaking it down, you make me sound like a proper analyst and a Big J journalist, which I am not.
Well, then what's Big Jim stand for? That's a Big J.
How about jerk?
All right, so we'll start with the Chargers yesterday, and maybe one of the Patriots' more dull games of the year, but they get the win nonetheless, and it seems like after the defense was the question mark for the first 4 weeks, it's the offense that's let them down, especially in the red zone. You saw yesterday they had to settle for four field goals, two of which were missed, and that's an issue in itself, but has your worry shifted from defense to offense?
No, they stink on both sides now. You know, that I don't think that the defense is better just because if you look at the stat sheet, okay, the numbers have been down over the last 4 weeks. That should have been a blowout yesterday. Okay, so now they're starting to struggle in the red zone a little bit. But even with the missed field goals, like, unlike the Tampa game 3 weeks ago, which was on a short week, they're beat up, tough spot. Okay, you know, the fact that the Bucs had that last shot there and they come up short, like, it made a little bit more sense because that game was a rock fight. This yesterday, that was a mess. That should have been a blowout. The Chargers should have had absolutely no chance to tie that game with a second remaining, and they did. And that's really on both sides of the ball. So, you know, my concern is it's on both sides, not just one.
So is an acquisition, this trade deadline, or just through the waiver wire, is that a necessity for the Patriots moving forward?
I think they're thin in three areas I would like to see them address, which I'm sure that they won't. Maybe one, I'd be happy with anything. But if I had to tier it, first is an edge defender, pass rusher. Second, I would like to now see a wide receiver added to this team, because depth, I think, is going to become a real issue there, especially if Chris Hogan's out for any time, and it doesn't sound like Malcolm Mitchell's coming back. And then linebacker, but what are you really going to get there? You know, they bring in someone like Kyle Van Noy, who's been better this year, but that's not really a high priority for me. For me, it's edge rusher and wide receiver 1-2.
So I just want to go back for a second here. They allowed 13 points yesterday to a Chargers team that had won three in a row. What about the defense yesterday concerned you? I know they had the one long run. Not having Malcolm Brown obviously hurt them, but outside of that play, what did you see that concerned you?
Cassius Marsh blows, and he continues to be a liability week in, week out. He is either getting caught up in the wash, he's pursued too far up the field. Anytime that he is run at, he is giving up big chunks of yardage, and I'm surprised that teams don't take advantage of going at him more. Then again, there is a lot of dumb football teams throughout the league. You saw that yesterday with the Chargers. But, you know, the interior, I think, is going to be a problem without Hightower, especially when they've had them in the middle. But specifically, Marsh, bad. You know, I thought for two straight weeks now, with the Falcons and the Chargers, there was plays to be made, and because of their stupidity between these two, they left plays on the field. I mean, credit again to the defense. I don't want to take too much away from them because, yes, statistically they have been better, but I just think that they've kind of gotten away with a couple of really good-looking games because of the stupidity of the opponent.
And we're talking to Jim Murray of 98.5 The Sports Hub. Of course, yesterday there was that punt return from Travis Benjamin, ended up being a safety. Was that the dumbest play you've ever seen?
I believe I tweeted the exact same thing, yes. If not the, it's one of. That's one of the stupidest plays I've ever seen in my 30-plus years of watching football.
Does that vindicate Belichick with the emphasis he puts on special teams? And people were talking about not carrying an extra receiver, not carrying an extra linebacker because they had to carry these guys like a Brandon Bolden, like a Brandon King. Does Belichick get a little bit of a nod there for the special teams effort made on that play?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that was a, you know, and so if I'm coming off too negative, let me say something positive here. That was a three-phases win for that team yesterday. So it was ugly, as you said, Alex, but, you know, special teams definitely deserves a shout-out because they were great yesterday, even though they missed two kicks.
Speaking of the kicks, we'll start with Steven Gostkowski here as we kind of open it up to the bigger picture. He did miss two kicks yesterday. He's been great on kickoffs, but, again, the field goals have been an issue. Is that a guy you could look, maybe that's where they make a move at the deadline, with frequently as kickers have been turning over?
So I saw, what was it? Who was it? It was someone on NBC Sports Boston. Was it, why am I blanking? It's the heavy guy. He used to be the offense coordinator and was the coach.
Charlie Weiss.
Charlie
Weiss brought up, maybe they make a move for Adam Vinatieri, correct? Am I getting that right?
I didn't see that, but I'm drooling over that right now.
Yeah, I've been one of the people that's hard on Gostkowski. The first 43-yarder that he missed, I don't know, he had already hit two kicks. I looked at it. It was kind of a bad weather day, a little bit windy there. And I felt like underreported because that deteriorated as the day went on. The first one, I was like, eh, law averages. And typically when he misses one, I'm quick to social media, be like, this a-hole. The second one, though, ugh. And then even if you look at his last kick, which he made, if he's 10 yards back, that thing was sailing right. He would have missed it. So it's an issue, but I don't need some sort of overreactionary move like, hey, let's now bring in a kicker. Like, you go with the one who brought you to the dance. You know, he is your guy. Is he the elite kicker that he was a couple of years ago? Clearly not. But, you know, you mentioned, too, about the kickoffs. So while he's a little bit shaky, obviously, with extra points and the field goals, his kickoffs have been ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And that these dumb teams keep trying to return it and getting blown up and having their starting drives begin at, you know, anywhere between the 13 and 18-yard line, well, that's, you know, he's almost invaluable there. So I think with Gostkowski, you take the good with the bad, and that's it. But to make a move for someone else, like at this point, it ain't worth it.
Nate Solder's also been a guy who's been kind of underwhelming this season. What do you think his future is in New England? Is he out after the season?
I didn't catch the name. Who'd you say?
Nate Solder.
Oh, well, you know, it's funny. If you want to rewatch the game, there was a point yesterday in the second quarter, I think on their last drive before they went into the half, where two straight plays, he was the best he's looked all year on mm-hmm. Joey Bosa on back-to-back passing plays. I was like, wow, all right, there's the Nate Solder that I know, you know. And then his play kind of deteriorated as the game went on, and he looked like the guy we've seen through the first 7 weeks. Is he done after this year? I mean, look, with everything that's going on with this kid whose cancer has relapsed, I can't imagine what that is like to go through as a parent. So, I mean, if he wanted to walk away, hey, do whatever you got to do, man. Your family comes first. But I don't want to see any kind of extension or anything for him just as a fan and someone, you know, covering the team. Like, he's not the same guy that he was a couple of years ago. Even last year, he looks like a shell of himself. So whether that's physical or mental, I don't know, but I'd be okay if they moved on from Solder after this year.
Again, we're talking to Jim Murray of 98.5 The Sports Hub. Jim, 8 weeks in, we've got a pretty good sample size on this team now. Which player has been the biggest surprise for you in a good way, and which player has let you down the most?
Oh, good question. Biggest surprise. Let's see. Maybe, you know, it's just the continued consistency of Danny Amendola when they really need it. You know, I really questioned his durability when he came in what was that, 2013, and he was even dealing with, you know, I think a torn groin or whatever that injury was at the time, and he always had an injury history. But, dude, that guy takes a beating. They still even had him on punt returns yesterday, which I don't like when he's dealing with a hyperextended knee. He's like Mr. Automatic, I feel like. When Brady needs a big third and seven, third and eight, he looks to him, and rightfully so. So his continued consistency is really impresses me. And in terms of underwhelming, I expected more from Stephon Gilmore, like most people. He's now not been on the field for three straight weeks. I think he'll look like, unfortunately, it's heresy to to question if he's actually injured, but I get it. He's concussed. There's different grades of it, so I'm sure he's concussed. But, I mean, outside of that game in Tampa where he was pretty good manned up on Mike Evans, like, he's been awful. and I think without question, the worst free agent signing in the Bill Belichick Patriots era.
So what's his role going to be like once he comes back? And do you think that his contract plays a factor in Bill Belichick's decision-making? You got a guy you signed for this amount of money. You want to get something out of him.
I would have to think so because of the money that they gave him. They have to justify his existence. But if he's, you know, if everything looks like a jailbreak like it did against the Carolina Panthers going back about a month or so, and Johnson Badamosi at least can make tackles and isn't lost and giving up, you know, big 60, 70-yard plays for a touchdown, you got to sit his ass down. And the thing is, you would also have the built-in excuse of injury. So that's where it can actually play into the Patriots' favor. If Gilmore comes back in that game against Denver a couple of weeks from now and he's a complete disaster and giving up giant plays, well, you sit his ass down and be like, oh, we got dinged. He's concussed.
I mean, he's making the Dwayne Stark signing look good at this point, if that's a name you recognize. But
that's another bad one. But no, right now, Gilmore, dude, like that, especially that they didn't extend Malcolm Butler, it looks real bad right now.
Does Tom Brady, in your eyes, have a shot at being the NFL MVP this year?
Yeah, you can certainly make a case for him. You know, look, if the Texans squeak into the playoffs and Deshaun Watson keeps up the way he's been playing, and he's throwing for a few touchdowns of 300 yards every week, you know, again, I don't know how sustainable that is, but if he's keeping up that kind of a pace, you got a case for him. You certainly can make a case for Carson Wentz. Right now, if I had a vote and I had to after 8 weeks, I would give it to Wentz, but sure, Brady's right in that conversation of like the top two or three guys.
All right, Jim, before we let you go here, looking ahead at the back half of the schedule, people are already talking about how tough it may be. They're at Denver, then against Oakland in Mexico City, so another high-altitude West Coast game. Outside of that, it's Pittsburgh and then all divisional games. But given the way the division's played after seeing Pittsburgh last night, are people maybe underestimating how tough the Patriots' remaining schedule is?
Yeah, without question. They have one home game between now and Christmas Eve, and that's going to be an issue. And I don't like even before they played one game, Alex, I didn't like the fact they have two games against Miami in a matter of 3 weeks. That's some tough sledding there. And Miami is, I think, plays over the edge in terms of defense. I think that they're dirty. So if they're out of it and you have Ndamukong Suh out there and Kiko Alonso, who I think is kind of a cheap shot artist and proved that last week in the game against Baltimore, like, I don't like that. You know, Brady could get his head knocked off in that game. The Raiders game in Mexico is going to be tough. The Bills look like they might actually be decent, so that could be an issue that you still got to go there. So, yeah, it's tough. I think it's realistic they could finish 11-5.
And actually, I know, sir, we're going to let you go one more because we were talking off the air, Jim, about your tweet last night during the World Series that you'll take any football game over the best World Series game. I'm on your side with that. Give me football any day of the week. I need you to convince my co-host why waiting 30 minutes for four pitches isn't worth your Sunday night because he just won't listen to me.
Hey, and you know, Felger's talked about it before about how it's different strokes for different folks. You like ice cream, I like brownies. You like fried chicken, I like hot dogs. It's different tastes. If you're a baseball guy, I'm not going to try to convince you. What always makes me laugh, though, is if I was just innocuously tweeting about that Detroit-Pittsburgh game, and of course, because it's Twitter and it's a cesspool, all the hardcore baseball nerds, like, how are you not watching the World Series? This is the greatest game ever. How are you not watching the World Series? This is unbelievable. Like, shut up. You know, like, I like baseball at this point, kind of. You know, I've really lost it for it because the games take 9 effing hours long. So, you know, if that's what you're into, cool. I ain't going to try to convince you. I just, at this point, I don't care. I don't really have much rooting interest in either of those teams. It was football night. I was oversaturated with football all day long. I was at Gillette. I came home, and that Pittsburgh-Detroit game ended, and I'm like, I'm good. I'm not flipping over because I know that it was at that point in the seventh inning. I'm not giving you 3 more hours until the game ended, and so screw it. So I ain't going to bother trying to convince you. I'm a football guy through and through, always will be, and if you want to enjoy the World Series, Have at it. I'll catch up with the highlights on next morning.
You can hear him on Felger and Mazz from 2 to 6 on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow him on Twitter at Big Jim Murray. Jim, thanks for talking football with us.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to the show, Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz. Talking Celtics, and I got to start off by apologizing here, Lebowitz, because last week I went on that rant about Kyrie Irving not being able to step up, not able to be the guy. And as we've seen in the last week, specifically that game against the Bucks, what was that, Saturday night?
Mm-hmm.
This is the Kyrie I think I expected. We all expected. He won them that game single-handedly. He's been great. The Celtics have the longest winning streak in the East, and they sit at the top of the Eastern Conference. Are you surprised at all?
No, I'm not surprised by anything in the start of the season. I thought that they'd probably have a slower start than what they've had, but you know, it's a down year, and I feel like that's been the theme of not only the NBA but most of leagues in the U.S. So I'm not shocked. I think that they're looking really good. I'm surprised with the production of the rookies to start. I'm surprised with Terry Rozier's production early on in the season, and Aaron Baines' impact as well. He's been huge. So there's certain things I'm surprised at. I'm not surprised with how Kyrie's done and how he's fit into the system. I'm not surprised that there's teams like the Cavs that have been underperforming so far.
I'm surprised about a lot of this. I think I'm the exact opposite. I'm surprised they are, what now, 4-2, 5-2?
4-2.
4-2 as we record this on Monday morning. Could be different by the time you listen to this. They have the Spurs Monday night. But I'm surprised they got off to that 4-2 start, given what happened on opening night with Gordon Hayward, that they rebounded as quick as they did. And there wasn't an adjustment period. They seemed to have figured things out without him. I'm surprised they didn't make any personnel moves to adjust around that. I thought for sure we were going to see a veteran signing. We still may. They have that hardship exception.
Mm-hmm.
So they could bring in, whether it be a Gerald Green. I saw Lou Williams' name thrown out there. And it could be a guy like that, but I thought it would be much sooner. And I am very surprised that the Cleveland Cavaliers have struggled the way they have out of the gate. I know some people are down on that team for being old, for being injury prone, but when you have the best player in the world losing the way they've lost to the teams they have lost to as often as they have lost early in this season, I know it's the regular season. I know you say NBA teams don't try, and there is truth to that. There is 100% truth to that, but you need to have you should have a lot of faith right now as a Celtics fan, as somebody who is not a green teamer, who regularly goes after green teamers mm-hmm. for being too happy-go-lucky. You need to have a lot of optimism right now as a Celtics fan, seeing both what you're doing and what the Cleveland Cavaliers are doing.
Yeah, I'm just not going to trust it yet. And you alluded to this. It's six games into the season, seven games into the season for some teams. So we're about 10% of the way through. I just don't think it's going to last. I think the Cavaliers have proven it. It doesn't matter where you finish in your conference, especially in the East. They'll pick it up. I think it's reasonable to be concerned about how old that roster is and how healthy they'll remain. You have Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose on that team. Isaiah won't be back for a while. There are reasons to be concerned. They're still coming out of the Eastern Conference regardless of losing to the Knicks by 21 points. They won't beat the Warriors, but still, this is a team with LeBron James, and at the end of the day, they'll still be that, and they'll be a clutch team that comes through when it matters late in the season because they're just simply better. But this is going to happen. You're going to have teams with slow starts, and I feel like the Cavaliers routinely do this.
But here's what's different for me this year about it. And I talked about this in the offseason. LeBron, I think we both agree, LeBron's gone at the end of the year,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
They're 3-4. He's clearly not getting along with everybody in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Without him, they're a borderline playoff team. You take LeBron James off that roster, borderline playoff team because the East is weak.
Maybe not even.
Not even a playoff team or not even borderline?
I think borderline is a little generous. I don't think they're. I think they're. Without Isaiah Thomas, if Kevin Love's their best player, I don't think that's a playoff team.
I'm only putting them in because the East is so weak. But yeah, it's not a good team. We agree.
Yeah.
So LeBron James has a couple hundred million dollars coming to him. He can choose to go anywhere he wants in the offseason. What stops him from checking out, saying, I'm going to take care of me, I want to be rested, and just disengaging? And if he disengages, that team's not coming out of the East if he doesn't care. If he's going to sleepwalk through a playoff series, not even against the Celtics, against the Wizards, heck, against the Bucks, who I've loved to this point.
Antetokounmpo's looked really, really
he's
good.
The MVP right now.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question about that. It's really early, but, you know, first week MVP. If LeBron checks out, that's wide open. They're not going to win unless LeBron is 100% engaged. This goes back to me. Remember the Mo Williams, the Drunas Ilgauskas Cleveland teams back in the day? LeBron needed to be everything he was and then some to get those teams where they needed to be. This team is right on par with those teams. Same amount of talent. They're only going to go as far as LeBron carries them. Dwayne Wade's not going to bail him out. Chris Bosh is not going to bail him out. Kyrie Irving is not going to bail him out because he ran him out of town.
Yeah. He's still LeBron James, though. Like, he's still a competitor.
But what I'm saying is, what if he's not? What if he checks out and decides not to be LeBron James and just decides to go through the motions? And LeBron going through the motions, still 20 points a night, but what if he decides to go through the motions? He's not going to go all out sprinting down the floor on chase down blocks. He's not going to box guys out because he doesn't want to get hurt. He doesn't want to affect his payday next year.
He doesn't have to do that until playoffs, though. Like, I agree with you. I don't think he's going to give it his all in the regular season. He'll play, you know, 37 to 40 minutes a game.
But we just said this is a borderline playoff team without LeBron.
But he's still LeBron. Like, LeBron half effort is still one of the better players in the NBA. And I think that it doesn't make a difference. They're not going to finish below the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. We can both agree on that.
I'm somebody who will take what I've seen on the court, on the field, on the ice, whatever, and apply that to predictions. That's what I'll do.
So you know, you're not even willing to say that yet.
No, it's still very possible that they go on a tear and LeBron says, you know what, I need to take things over. But just given what I've seen from him in the past, knowing what's coming, and, I mean, losing to the Knicks on a night where it looked like LeBron was trying, how can you be confident? Look, am I still putting them, if you ask me right now, put down my top teams, top eight teams in the East in order, I'm still putting the Cavs in the one seed. Maybe the two based on what I've seen. But I'm not confident about it. There's going to be a big asterisk next to it. Like, yes, okay, realistically, you want to put me in a corner, they're a top three seed.
Yeah.
But talk to me in December. If they're still playing like this in December, which I wouldn't be over the top surprised, I'd be a little surprised. I wouldn't be over the top surprised given what I've seen. Like, I think there is a legitimate chance of that. I wouldn't be shocked if we're sitting here in December and the Cavs are a sixth seed.
I think we can agree on the fact that LeBron's made up his mind on whether or not he wants to come back to Cleveland next year.
Yes.
The question is, does that affect how dedicated he is to this season's team?
I think
team?
It does. I 100% think it does.
And it might. It might. They're not playing well right now. You can't look past that. He's still LeBron James. I still think they're going to turn it around. And I think Isaiah Thomas coming back will also have a major impact on this team. Hot take there. So, that's another thing. They're without Kyrie Irving. They're really not that great of a roster once you get past LeBron James, and they have a lot of injury-prone guys on that team. Still, Isaiah will be back. Kevin Love is still a very good player. You still have Tristan Thompson. They have some talent. They have some talent. I think it will turn around. I don't think they're winning the NBA Finals. I don't think this team's as good as they were last season. And I think LeBron James has a realistic outlook at what this team is capable of, and that's one of the reasons why he's out of town. And maybe that does play a factor into why they've started the season 3-4 while we're recording this. I don't know. Well, I'm still picking them in the East, though, and it doesn't change. Even if he's going all out, they're not beating the Warriors.
I'll trade you an Isaiah hot take for an Isaiah hot take. Well, first of all, let me start with this. He doesn't come back until January. Things could be decided at that point. It may not matter. Not decide as in the Cavs are out of the playoffs in January, but the one seed could be a stretch.
Yep.
And LeBron could say, if I'm not going to get the one or two seed, I don't care. Like, I don't know if Isaiah Thomas plays this season. I really question that, because if he's not cleared until January, you got to give him a couple weeks to get back into game shape, because it sounds like he can't even really work out much right now, given the nature of his injury. At that point, it's February. You have 2 months left in the season. If he doesn't play, he's still riding off his Celtics stock. Somebody will still give him a max contract. If he comes back and isn't what he was, he's going to cost himself a lot of money. He may shut himself down. Maybe. So an Isaiah hot take for an Isaiah hot take.
Well, you got to think he's going to be, if he does come back, I don't think it's really up to him. They're going to want him back.
It's the NBA. It's up to the players. Let's be honest.
That's true, but Isaiah's a competitor. He's not going to sit because he thinks that he might get more money that way.
Yeah, he's a competitor, but when they asked him how often did he throw out the Brinks truck answer here in Boston?
He did. I think that was
He's a businessman.
He is.
He's equal.
He's a competitor, though.
I think he balances it well.
Yeah.
But
I think he wants to win. I think he's hungry. I think the fact that the Celtics traded him and that's their number one threat in the East, that's not something he's looking past. And that's something that he's looking forward to, if anything. So I think as a competitor, there's no way he's sitting out if it's up to him. And I don't think he's sitting out if it's up to the Cavaliers, too, because they need him. And I think he will come back, and he'll be all right. It might not be by January, but it could be, you know, by the All-Star break. And if that's the case, they'll be fine, at least in the Eastern Conference.
Okay, so this was supposed to be a Celtics segment. The Cavs struggling is the big story in the NBA right now. So yeah. We touched on that, but we're 10 minutes in, and we haven't even gotten to really what I wanted to talk about with the Celtics, which is I've called them the rookies. I think you referred to them as the rookies. Only one is actually a rookie, but they're going to be intertwined forever, and that's Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. How impressive those kids have been, how unimpressive Markelle Fultz has been. It looks like Danny won another one. And if you listen to the show, you know I'm not the biggest Jaylen Brown guy. I think Jason Tatum is special. I think Jason Tatum is a stud. The putback dunk he had for the first basket against the Knicks last week had me off my couch. If they go on and make an actual run this year, as in a seven games against the Cavs to the finals run, I think it is more on those two kids than it is on Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's going to do what he's going to do, and he's going to be an important part. But it is what those two have done that have put the Celtics in the position that they're in.
They're filling the void that Gordon Hayward has left with his injury.
I think they're filling the void of Gordon Hayward and Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
They're feeling some massive shame.
Well, I think one thing we can agree on is Kyrie Irving is a much better basketball player than Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, yeah. No, it took him a little bit to get into it, but what we've seen from him the last couple of games, this is the guy I thought we were getting. I'm glad he's finally arrived.
So I think you have an upgrade at that position. You're small forward. Even without, like, you get rid of Jay Crowder, you bring in Gordon Hayward. That's absolutely an upgrade. I think that the combination between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum is better than anything that Jay Crowder was going to give you.
Oh, 100%.
So I think this is a better team. Am I crazy to say that? We're only six games in?
No, you're not. I think that's a foregone conclusion at this point.
This is a better team than what we saw last year, without
Gordon
Hayward.
They're more well-rounded. Aaron Baines, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
They should get Morris back soon.
Horford with Kyrie Irving is a much better combo than Horford with Isaiah Thomas.
Nick Gelso of CLNS, we've had him on. We know how much he watches every Celtics game under a microscope. And he had a tweet last week at CLNS_Nick on Twitter that Al Horford is a better player with Kyrie Irving on the floor than just about anybody else. And that, I think there's some truth to that. That really stuck out to me, that tweet.
Absolutely. And you know what? Horford's a guy who's gotten some flack since he's been in a Celtics uniform, which I think is unfair. They call him Al Borford because he's not the most exciting guy. But that team is so much better when he is on the floor. He's like the Dante Hightower of the Celtics.
Okay, I wouldn't go that far.
But he's so valuable to this team just because they're just so much more fluid offensively. He's an underrated defensive player. He did a really good job on Antetokounmpo last week.
And Kristaps.
And Kristaps Porzingis. He did a really good job on both those guys. He's been very good for this team, and he's the most underrated aspect who's gone overlooked because you've had two guys, really three, in Kyrie, Tatum, and Brown, who have been playing exceptionally. They're doing an awesome job, and you gotta love what we've seen from as you call them, the two rookies. Jason Tatum, if it wasn't for Ben Simmons, he'd probably be the favorite to win Rookie of the Year early on.
I still think he may be. I know Simmons has been good, but you're going to factor in how well the team did, too. All right, that's going to do it for our Celtics talk this week. Obviously, four games, I think, before we talk to you guys again, right?
We got three. The fourth will be a week from today.
On Monday. Okay, so, well.
Actually, no, four, because there's tonight, there's Monday night,
yep,
Wednesday,
and Sunday.
Friday and Sunday.
Okay, yep. So four games before we talk to you again, so there will be a lot to break down then. When we come back on the other side, this World Series may be the saving grace that baseball has needed. We will touch on it in 30 seconds. You're listening to Colin.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
I'll be honest, at the beginning of the week wasn't something I was planning on. Been mostly a Boston show, and it's baseball. It's not the Red Sox, it's baseball. But we may be getting treated to the greatest World Series of all time, at least from an entertainment standpoint point of view.
Absolutely. This has been as back and forth as I've ever seen in the World Series. And the Astros had to win that game five, because you're going back to L.A. You have two games there. You need to go into L.A. with the lead. You're not going to be in Houston anymore. It's not the Yankees being up 3-2 when you're going back home. Completely different ballgame, much better team. So that was a must-win last night for the Astros, and what a game. Just so back and forth. Every time L.A. would get in the board, the Astros would respond. Ended up going to extras. I didn't get to see the last two innings of the game because my power went out. But it was, from what I saw, it was an unbelievable game, and it seems like a crazy finish on top of that.
All right, so I might be in the minority here. It's been entertaining, but I'm not a fan of the juice baseballs. It's getting ridiculous at this point. Part of the reason home runs are so fun and so amazing is because they're supposed to never happen. On this regular of a basis, it kind of takes it away. And imagine a full season of this. That would suck, right? Like, it's cool for one series, and because it's the World Series, it's fun. And I understand why the MLB wants more offense. We went from a World Series where the bullpens were everything to a series where the bullpens mean nothing. But I'm not a fan of the juice baseballs. Like, I like home runs. But part of the reason home runs are cool is because so few people can do it on a regular basis. If Jose Altuve, 5'6 Jose Altuve, is hitting 450-foot dingers, it's not an accomplishment anymore. And I know Altuve is a good player. It's not to take anything away from him, but that's not his game, right? Giancarlo Stanton, the reason we want him so bad is because he's such a rare commodity.
Yeah.
That's why the Red Sox need to go get him. But if you can go get a twig that can do that because you're using golf balls instead of baseballs, who cares?
Yeah, and it also raises the question, which is going to bring in more fans? These high-scoring games in which there's a ton of home runs, or like game one when you have a 2.5-hour game that's, you know, an average score, like a 4-1 score. You know how long last night's game was? You want to guess?
Was it 5:10, 5:12, right?
5 hours and 17 minutes.
5:17. I fell asleep at the end, and it was captivating, but look, I work a long day. You work a long day. We all do. Mm-hmm. We're not in high school anymore where we can sleep during the day during class, and there's no better time to watch sports than when you're a high school student. That's true, but I was falling asleep last night. I was lucky enough I woke up for the walk-off on Monday night. I didn't see them put the guys on base. I was nodding off. And yeah. You know what? I watched an entire football game and still got to see most of that baseball game. I don't have time for that. And the home runs are fun, but you're diluting the product. You look at how much trouble the NFL is having right now with diluting the product. Is the MLB diluting home runs? I know that's like a wild accusation,
yeah.
But...
I don't know. You're in a different camp than me. We're different with our fandom. You love football.
Right.
You're a football guy.
Jim Murray had it last night. Give me a bad football game over this World Series any day.
Which
World
is
Series
the dumbest,
is fun.
My least favorite take of all time.
It's so much better. Don't you want action?
That was action. No, what do you tell you? You're mad because it was a high-scoring game. It was long. That was an amazing game.
There's high-scoring games, but you had at one point, I think it was in the eighth inning, the Astros put a pitcher in the game. He issued a 4-pitch walk, and they took him out. So you had commercials on both sides of that in a 4-pitch walk. So essentially nothing happened for about 30 minutes.
Yeah, and that's going to happen. You're not going to change that in baseball, and I get not liking that. And that is a part that you can definitely complain about. It's still so tense. What you have in baseball, what you don't have in any other sport, is the suspense between pitches, especially at this stage. And when you have a back-and-forth game like you've had pretty much every single game this series – that suspense is palpable. It's incredible. It's why you watch sports.
But you had 2 fourth-and-goals last night for the Detroit Lions in the fourth quarter.
But it's week eight, and the reality is the Lions aren't a Super Bowl contender. The Steelers are a good team. They're fun to watch. You're talking about the World Series, the biggest stage, one of the biggest stages in sports, a wild atmosphere in which it was a high-scoring game, and it came down to the wire.
But I probably saw 15, 20 plays. I got to watch 15 to 20 plays of that football game in the time it took 4 pitches in the baseball game. You know what? And I know the World Series had better ratings, but the way I look at it, I knew I could watch. I didn't have to choose. I could watch that whole football game, and I wasn't going to miss any of the baseball game. And I didn't miss anything important because of the football game. I missed it because I went upstairs to make popcorn at a stupid time. But I knew I wasn't going to miss the important parts of the baseball game because the football game was going to go 3 hours probably, give or take, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. And I knew I was still going to be able to see baseball. And that, to me, is just a systemic issue in baseball. This World Series, as good as it has been, has still pointed out the major flaws in the game.
You also can't look at a World Series game the same way you look at a regular season game.
I know that.
They're pulling their pitchers after any sign of trouble. It's because the stakes are so high. So it's going to be slower. It's just going to be. The game one is an anomaly. I'll still take these long games that come down the wire that are back and forth with a lot of action, a lot of offense over, you know, these 2.5 hour ones that kind of go by quick and there's not much excitement, or I'll take it over any regular season football game. I will take that World Series game over just because it's the World Series. It's the biggest stage, and it's two teams that have not won in a very long time.
Did you see that Houston-Seattle game yesterday?
That was a very good game.
That was pretty damn good.
That was a good game.
I felt more entertained by that. Okay, let's use the pitchers because we want to talk about the series itself.
Yeah.
And you mentioned pulling the pitchers too early. Kershaw looked good last night through 4 innings, mm-hmm. right? It was a 4-and-change. I think he ended up with 4 2/3.
Yep.
And then they pulled him. And it's given I did not understand that move at all. I thought the Dodgers deserved to lose that game. Dave Roberts deserved to lose that game right there. You have the best pitcher in the world. He's pitching well. You see what your bullpen has been. You see what your bullpen has been. You got to stick it. I don't know what these managers are. I don't remember it being like this. I remember shorter leashes in the playoffs, right, for the last 10, 15 years. I never remember it being this bad where you feel accomplished if a starter goes 5 innings.
I mean, game management.
And in the American League ballpark, too. It's a different thing, I guess, if you're in L.A., but in the American League ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, in-game strategy is continuing to evolve. We saw that last year with the Indians and how Terry Francona used his bullpen. It's going to always evolve, and these managers are going to have short leashes. I think it's kind of typical for the playoffs. Every game matters. And the thing is, Clayton Kershaw, you say he's the best pitcher in baseball. I don't know about that.
He's the best pitcher left, I'll tell you that.
I think that he still has something to prove in regards to his playoff success.
But wasn't he proving it last night before they took him out?
No, he gave up 6 earned runs. I would say that he gave it the 3-run shot to it wasn't Altuve. It was he gave it the 3-run shot to
Is it Correa?
It was Gurriel, Yuli Gurriel, and that was actually a 3-run shot. So he was losing it. You give up 4 runs, you're only in the 4th inning. That's not a great performance, especially when you have a cushion to start.
Right, he gave up 6. Some of those are inherited, though, right?
Some of those, yeah, but they're still charged to him. So Maeda, he gave up a home run, which was that 3-run shot to Altuve, I believe.
Yeah.
And that was what tied it back up. That's what gave him the lead again. That's what gave him the 7-4 lead. So, but still, he allowed those runners on base. I'm not saying he would have given up that home run, but still, he was not having a great game. He was shaky. He was missing his spots. He was leaving the ball up, and he's had problems with that in the playoffs before. That happens. That's why Dave Roberts pulled him. They don't have a great bullpen. Neither of these teams had a very good bullpen this postseason. Still, you can't stick with a guy who's starting to get rattled out there, and that's been a pattern for a guy like Clayton Kershaw.
Well, it's almost become not a self-fulfilling prophecy. I can't think of the term, but these teams don't trust their starters, so they go to the bullpen because they think they have a better bullpen. Then you get late into the playoffs, and the bullpen start to implode because they're overworked. You need your starters to pitch a certain number of innings because you can't rely on the bullpen for this many raw innings, period, no matter what the situation is, no matter what the score is, anything. the bullpen can't throw this many innings.
Well, you look at what Houston's doing right now, too. They had McHugh and Peacock pitch last night out of the bullpen. So these teams, when it comes to the playoffs, they're relying on their starters in late innings as much as they are to start the game. And that right there is a testament to how weak these bullpens were coming in. But it also kind of ruins the idea that you had to have a stacked bullpen to win a World Series. That's what we've seen in past years. That's not the case this year, which is kind of nice. There's more offense. You're relying more on big-name guys who are coming out, who are in that starting rotation. But, yeah, you see it. There's just not a lot of trust for pitchers in this league, and that goes back to the fact that, one, the balls are juiced, and two, offensive production is kind of on the up and up. We had a decline. Now we're seeing more of it. That's definitely affecting the way that managers are using their bullpens.
All right, so game six, Tuesday night, Halloween, Justin Verlander against Rich Hill in L.A., Houston with the 3-2 lead. I think the Dodgers are going to end up coming back in this. I do.
I hope they force a game seven.
I think at the very least we'll get that. We saw firsthand how easily rattled Verlander got pitching at Fenway.
He regathered, though, to his credit, a little bit.
He wasn't the reason they won that game.
Well, no, but he regathered. He did. He at least came back out and started pitching shutdown baseball for the most part.
I think we get a game seven just as a rule of thumb for me, especially in baseball and going with the home team in game seven. So I got the Dodgers coming back and taking this one. I know Dodger Stadium is definitely a hitter's park, but you can't. I want to say you can't rely on the home runs to keep coming like this, but these stupid baseballs. These stupid baseballs.
It sucks, right?
Am I the only one who thinks it sucks?
No,
because they're not real home runs; they're empty home runs.
I don't think they are. I mean that swing that Altuve put on that ball last night, that was barrel on the bat, or ball on the barrel. Same thing with George Springer; they came up and well, I think they're going to put in good swings on it on top of
for every one of those. There's one Puig had to rake out of the dirt that he hit out.
Yeah, the one to left and field.
What about Todd Frazier's in the ECS?
Yeah.
That he just waved at.
So last time
I think
out.
I think it was Todd Frazier.
Last time out, Rich Hill went four innings. This was back in game two. And he went four innings, giving up one earned run. He had a short leash, too. And the Dodgers ended up losing that game in extra innings. Verlander, on the other hand, went six innings. He kind of unraveled late in his outing, I believe, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he did. So he gave up two runs. Or he gave up a run in that sixth inning. They ended up getting two in that inning. So I'm looking for a good matchup. I think this is going to be another game that's gonna be tightly contested. We'll come down to the wire, and I think we all deserve a game seven after what we've seen. We all want a game seven and want to see that matchup to end the series. I'm looking forward to it. This has been awesome baseball. I think it's been good for the league. They've been long games, but you saw the ratings last night. They crushed Sunday Night Football. They crushed them. So we're going to see more of the same. This has been good for baseball this postseason, even with the five-hour games. I don't mind the juice baseballs. I don't think it has as big of an impact as people are saying. I think we're just seeing two really good lineups go at it.
They're changing the game in a very drastic way, and they're trying to do it under the table. I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah.
And we'll see if these balls come into play regular season. I'm telling you, your tone will change if we get a full season of this. A full season of... This is making me nauseous thinking about it.
Yeah.
A full season of four-hour, 10-8 finals in which the leader in ERA is at like 3-6.
One thing we can trust, though, is I believe Rob Manfred's the best commissioner in sports. I think he's trying to speed up the game, and I think there will be changes implemented that will help baseball grow and won't affect, you know, the play on the field, but speed it up so at least it's more watchable than it has been. I don't think higher offense.
Those juice balls aren't going to do it.
No, it won't. And I don't think that's going to be something that's, you know, going to be a consistent thing.
I really hope not, because it'll be fun for a week. It's like saying you want to go to Vegas for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, let's go. Who's the comedian who has a bit about it? It's, I can't remember his name. Look it up, because I want to give him the credit. But you go to Vegas for 2 or 3 days, it's a lot of fun. You go to Vegas for 2 weeks, and you want to leave like nowhere else.
Oh, yeah.
It's too much. It's like saying, hey, do you want to eat cake and candy and cookies and pizza and steak and hot dogs and, I don't know, everything else for dinner? Like, no, everything in moderation.
Vegas is a weekend trip. That's what it is.
Tom Segura. Tom Segura is the comedian.
Oh, yeah. I love Tom Segura. Tom Segura's awesome.
Funny guy. Yeah. All right. On that note, that's it for us this week. Patriots bye coming up. So we'll have something NFL next week. We'll see. We'll talk during the week. We'll figure that out. We'll know the World Series winner.
Maybe we'll have a move to discuss. Who knows?
Maybe we. Yeah, trade deadline coming up Tuesday at 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Bruins and Celtics on the table, and college basketball starts a week from Friday. So we will have our college basketball preview next week as well. Mm-hmm. You won't want to miss that. Of course, to get all of it, you can follow us on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast. Check us out on SoundCloud and iTunes as well. Until then, he's Alex Lebowitz. I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.